Namaste and in La Ketch, and welcome to this episode of One World in a New World. I'm Zen Benefiel, your host, and this week's guest is a gentleman by the name of Dennis Berry. He is a business coach, a strategist. He's a LinkedIn coach who does phenomenally well, and he has a way of mastering your business and helping you to own your life. He's published the Heart of Wealth newsletter on LinkedIn and has 57,000 subscribers. So he's making an impact. I think I have that number right, or it's close to that anyway. He's a certified business development and life mastery coach. He's a business owner several times. He's a numismatist. He's a culinary fitness expert and schooled in business administration, management, and the culinary arts. Dennis, I've been looking forward to this for a while. We've been communicating on LinkedIn for probably a year now. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, Zen, it's really nice to meet you, man. I think we have a lot of similarities, a little bit of differences, and that's what makes for a great conversation, right?
Oh, yeah, it's all spices for the soup, right? We just get in and enjoy, you know, the coagulations. So what we do in how we proceed in life, there's often a period where, and all of my guests have experienced this to some degree or another, of exploring the inner world and getting in touch with who we are really inside and being able to bring that more to bear in the outer world, because we live half inside and half outside. We rarely talk about what's going on inside, because we're usually afraid that somebody's going to think we're crazy when we do, right? And then that often kind of makes our outer lives a little cacophonic in the process. So how did you first begin to understand that there was another aspect to life that you hadn't explored yet and that really made a difference for you?
That's a really great question. Well, we were talking before the show, and I think it goes back to like my story in a nutshell. My 51 years of life in a nutshell is that I was a crazy wild guy in my 20s. I was an old ski guy. I lived in mountain towns around the country, and that turned, of course, I would ski 100 days a year, so I had to finance that, and plus all my drugs and alcohol. So I became a chef so I could ski every day and work every night. And that lifestyle led to, you know, the predictable outcomes of, you know, a crazy life.
Right. And lot of fun in a lot of respects too. And there's a downside to that as well.
Yeah. And well said, you know, it wasn't all tragedy and grief. I was in over 20 drunken car accidents. I drove my car into a house, broken relationships, health problems, financial problems, like all that stuff. But you're right. There were nice times too. I've had an incredible, amazing life. I met some amazing people. I have friends that I still, to this day, that I consider family. And that part was great. But in the end, it's not a sustainable lifestyle for 100-year life, right? So I was physically dying inside. So at the end, it was April 8th, 2003. Again, I'm giving you a really long story in 30 seconds. So on
presentation and curation is always a challenge, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. But on March 27th, 2003, I got fired from my job that I was kind of proud of at the time, and it was due to drinking. So they gave me like back pay, severance, commissions and stuff. And then I subconsciously went on this bender of drugs and alcohol to kill myself. And the real problem wasn't the drugs and alcohol. The problem was that I kept waking up. That was my problem. I didn't want to anymore. My life was really, I was just really existing, and it was a really terrible, painful existence of drugs and alcohol and cigarettes and just pain, you know. And on April 8th, I woke up and I peed my pants. I was in the same clothes for like 4 days, and I hadn't slept in days. And my girlfriend, who I had at the time, which was amazing because I was really kind of gross, she came over and opened the door, and she just looked at me and she's like, that this isn't going to work. And I just started crying. And I said, I can't stop. And she helped get me into a rehab 2 days later. And I've been sober ever since. So going on almost 21 years. But the important lesson with that is that just because you stop drinking, it's not a being sober isn't a not drinking contest. It's a it's about growing up and being mature and taking care of your responsibilities and looking the world in the eye. And that's why most people fail, because they think it's just a not drinking contest. But there's a lot of work that goes into it. And that's why, you know, it's a really small percentage of people that walk this path for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it's hard, because our subconscious mind is so programmed to check out when life gets hard. And we were also talking about that before the show too. But if things are uncomfortable and hard, it means we're on the right path.
Yeah. And we still, and you mentioned the programming, right? And Bruce Lipton is one that comes to mind when he's talking about all the cultural, historical, genetic programming that we carry into this body and mind from our past and even our present, and how we've been programmed through television and the media and all those kinds of things that we're all less than and will never achieve, right? It's like scripture all over again, right? And yet at the same time, there's that pearl that we discover. What was that like for you, and how would you describe that pearl? And I'll just leave it kind of an open-ended question from that perspective.
Well, I think what happened was I went to a rehab, and when I got to the rehab, I was there for 30 days, and the first day or two I got there, I was like, you know, I was ready to go. I almost died so many times, the drunken car accidents. It was a real mess. Mm-hmm. And when
but
I got
obviously
there,
you weren't meant to. There's an
I wasn't
overriding
meant to die.
Factor that's probably part of that pearl you're going to reveal.
Yeah. Well, and I was looking at some of the people there, and I, because a lot of them were there because they needed to be there, some were because they were made to go there. And I was really there because I was completely lost and hopeless. Like I had nothing left, mentally, financially, spiritually. I was a completely broken person. And I for the first time I could see, like, things. I was seeing things differently. And I decided right away to latch on to people that were taking it seriously. That were, because there was a program they were teaching you, like, it wasn't just like how to stay sober, but why we were behaving the way we did.
Mm.
And
know,
that was,
you've got to understand that, like, who was it, Socrates, you know, or Plato, know thyself.
It's really true. Yeah. And it's like, why the drugs and alcohol aren't the problem. It's what I'm using to cope with the real problem, which is my thinking. And it doesn't matter. That was my circumstances. Thinking is always the problem. What I used to cope with my problem with my thinking was drugs and alcohol. But people use food, porn, mindless scrolling, weed, Xanax, whatever you're using to check out to cope with the real problem, which is this, our unconditioned
stinking thinking, as we like to call it, right?
Exactly. Yes, thinking. That's what it is. And not, but thinking and not being aware of it. That's the real problem. So once we have to have that awareness that, oh, it's a distraction. The drugs and alcohol are a distraction. Okay, now I have the awareness, but now what do I do? Because right. I have 30
now
years.
You're stuck with your thoughts still.
Yes, and no coping mechanisms.
Right.
So that's why sobriety is hard, is because we have to relearn how to live. Mm-hmm. And we say, there's a saying in the world of recovery that says, we only have to change one thing. And that's everything. And it's really hard to do that in your 30s and 40s or 50s and beyond, because we're so conditioned. Everything we do is this, you know, subconscious conditioning. And it
right.
goes back to when we're 3 months old, you know, the childhood wounds, the abandonment, the betrayal, the rejection, humiliation, and injustice. And people are like, oh, they hear those words and they're like, oh, I remember in high school, I was rejected by this girl who said she wouldn't go out with me. But the truth is, there's two things. One, it doesn't matter where the wound came from. It just matters that you have it and how do you cope with it. Mm-hmm. And two, the real wounds happened, all of them, between ages of zero and like two, right? And it could be, you know, one day we were crying and we wanted our mom to pick us up. And maybe she was doing the dishes or something. And in that moment, she couldn't pick you up and we got wounded. And what
it's funny you mentioned that. True story. I was orphaned at birth. I was adopted at 6 weeks. Never thought about, okay, what about that period in between? Because when I eventually, at 4 and a half, was told of my adoption when they brought my sister home, I knew that I was loved unconditionally already. That wasn't a question. So it allowed me to look at the understanding of adoption in a different way. And of course, I had the questions of who my biological parents were, why they give me up, you know, all that normal stuff. What led me out of it was a question of, do I have a father and mother in heaven and can I talk to them? I'd had some churching already, right? And turns out I could. So what could have been, and still there were some abandonment issues that I had that surfaced, because we repeat those patterns. We set things up in life until we come to terms with, oh shit, I created this. Not anybody else. It was that choice. Unaware of the pattern. And then becoming aware of the pattern is like, oh, you mean I do have a choice, right? And you can make different choices. How did that affect what you chose to do once you garnered and attached yourself to the people who were really working the program?
Yeah, it was what you said earlier, something about willingness, you know, having that willingness to be able to see things differently and to do things differently. In my book that I wrote a while ago, which I don't even talk about anymore because it's not really applicable to what I do, but I talk about the how approach to life. And people are like, Dennis, how do I get sober? How do I build a business? How do I lose weight? How do I fix my shitty relationships or whatever it is? And the answer is in the question, how?
Yes.
And it stands for honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And I have to
and vulnerability, I would say, in that, right?
Yeah,
you've got to completely trust, which means you've got to develop a sense of vulnerability in that and accompany with some faith that things are going to move forward. And that's a sense as opposed to a thinking, right? I mean, when you get that, when you hit rock bottom, what was there? Was there a sense, a feeling, a movement? And this is something other guests have reflected. When they reach that place where their stinking thinking reaches its logical conclusion, I guess, for lack of a better, right? Then what? There's a change that takes place. Is it one? Because it seems to me that and I say this quite often, we can't think our way through a system built on vibration. We have to feel our way through. And quantum physics seems to edify that now, which edifies the old scriptural teachings of the same thing. How does that bring about this new awareness in you? And how did you experience that from the depths and then the feeling and then the thoughts that arose or emerged instead of the pattern thinking that you once had?
It took a little time, I have to say. Like your experience that you described to me was more, it was like a big awakening moment. Mine happened more over time, mm-hmm. where I started to have awarenesses here and there through doing work, through reading, writing, and then changing my life. Everybody refers to the reading and the writing part, but there's also like minding, taking care of your physical health.
Sure.
You know, drinking lots of water, stop eating sugar, reading, writing, you know, all
maybe
the,
even
all
going
those
to
things.
the extremes of becoming a vegetarian, right? Because a lot of folks are saying, well, you know, we kill animals and so there's a death vibration in them. We ingest that. That's going to lower our own vibration. Why would we want to do that? And yet we still do.
Yeah, I'm not a vegetarian. I did have moments of that or periods of that, but physically for my body, I like the protein, so I don't do that. But I understand what you're saying, and I've been that.
Well, there's no really
Yeah.
right or wrong. It's individually specific, right?
Yeah.
We don't have the right to tell another how to live their lives. It's their choice as long as they're doing it peacefully,
Sure.
you know, which is kind of what I'm ops director for a global peace movement called Live and Let Live. And we have two principles. We've got a moral and a legal. The moral is be an excellent human. The legal is don't aggress. And the core of that is removing aggression from the law, which we often put moral codes into. So we have no, you know, as long as a person is living peacefully and they're not a danger to them, you know, to others, hopefully not themselves too, then we need to support them rather than try to change them.
I agree. Yeah, it's live and let live, live and let die. Just, you know,
unfortunately, the latter does happen, right?
Yeah, just be. And a lot of our problems come from people trying to control other people's behaviors, and which we can't do. I'm responsible for myself. And when we focus in that, when we bring that mindset into whatever it is we're doing, we have a better chance at building our dreams, you know, doing what we want to do instead of focusing on what other people are doing.
So how do you release the control mechanisms? Because we all want to. We want to control every aspect of our lives and how things work. And we get so obsessed in that we are tunnel visioned towards it. And we don't recognize the serendipitous moments, the synchronicities that are attempting to lead us to a greater awareness. How do we get through that?
It's a discipline. It's a daily discipline. It starts in the morning, every morning. You know, we can wake up in the morning. I write about this in my posts. And like the content that I spit out is based on business and marketing, but also on inspiration and motivation and mindful living. It's about living mindfully. And if we're not living mindfully, we're living unmindfully, right? There's not a lot of gray area in between there. And it's like, if I wake
conscious
up.
Conscious or unconscious, who was it that
that's
was
really
it?
true.
Freud, no,
Yeah.
Jung, that says we seek to make the unconscious conscious.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
So, but it's like we wake up in the morning, we can grab our phone and start watching the depressing news or get angry about Facebook or something, or we can read something productive. For me, it's like I write down my three things for the day, not 30. I write down three things that I need to get done before I go to bed tonight. So that way I have clear focus on what it is I need to do. So once I get focused and centered and mindful, I get hydrated. I drink a couple liters of water. I move my body and I don't eat sugar. Like then I'm setting my day in motion the way I want it to go. If I wake up and freak out and start, you know, doing whatever, that's where road rage happens. That's where fights with our spouse and partners happen. That's where, you know, nothing happens. That's where procrastination happens. Like all those types of things, it's a discipline on how we want our days and our weeks and our lives to go.
Do you find that a lot of that uncovering of the discipline and the change in behavior is due to recognizing the unspoken, unfulfilled expectations we have of others and of self?
Yeah, sure.
The
Of
communication,
course.
right? It's like, how do we navigate in these relationships on the ocean of emotion to find safe harbor? How have you found works best for you and seems to be applicable in a wide range of others?
To do what? Just have an open communication
To be able to, you know, reach that state of vulnerability where you can accept that, oh, I might get rejected, and I still got to talk anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think it gets to the place of this living your values and fierce honesty. I learned this from my brother, who's a very successful financially and just his whole life. He's a really amazing man. And but he lives by this code of fierce honesty. And it's the hardest thing for us to do as humans because we all want to be accepted, we want to be loved, we want to be somebody amongst our community. And so we embellish, we twist things around a little bit, but being 100% fiercely honest all the time is really hard. And but
Does that fit? We
that.
see, I hear fiercely, and I can feel the, it's like, oh, so I can attack others, right? I don't think that's what you mean. I think that
No.
that fierce honesty also contains compassion and kindness.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's about being honest with yourself. And it doesn't matter so much about, of course, live your values and don't have shitty values and be honest with other people too. But when we're living that way, the reason I bring it up is to answer your question is like, I could be unapologetically me. I could just, I don't have to cover anything up. I could just be me because I'm being honest. And then I can communicate honestly. I can work honestly. I have my goals and dreams that I'm shooting for on a daily basis. I don't have to think outside of those because there's nothing to cover up or anything. I'm just shooting straight. That's where that comes from. It's like I'm just shooting straight. I'm a straight shooter. And then you
But
don't
you
have to.
find it in that straight shooting that there is an evolution of how you operate in that as you learn how to be more flowing with those. Because again, that when we're speaking to others, the receptors often have skewed ears or jilted ears. Right, they're listening from a place of separateness, of self-deprecation, of even defensiveness.
Yes.
So, in that, what are the kinds of things that you've noticed that soften that ability to be authentic and still be heard?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, these are you're asking a lot of very thinking questions, forcing me to think a lot. So repeat that one.
Okay, I don't know if I can. It just came out,
Or
right?
yeah, I mean,
It's one
like
of
just
those
being
falling
authentic.
things.
Really, I think it all comes back to being authentic and genuine. When I'm being authentic and genuine and I have healthy boundaries in place for myself and for, having or not having certain people or in my life or whatever it is I want to do and clear goals, and then it's easier to
Perhaps
just
it's
be.
that genuineness that you just mentioned, right? Because when you're genuine, to me, in my experience, and I'm still postulating this to many, we have a core. You're just talking about core values, right? Our core simply wants to love and be loved. That's the true, genuine state from which we live, can live in. And the choice to do so is the challenge.
I like that.
How did you navigate that challenge in moving from the depths, right, to the heights that you're at now? What are some of the key points of order that you, insights and wisdom that you gain from experience, I guess, in other words, because it's the experience. It's not the books, it's not the teachers, it's not, anything outside of us. It's the experiential side of things that gives us insight and wisdom. How did that grow in you?
I think it's about letting go of what we can't control. And once I when I realize like we're always we have this like death grip on everything about how we want things to go and how they're supposed to be. And when we realize that like the harder we grasp onto that, the harder it is to grasp onto that. And letting go is often the answer. And I think some of that is a lot of that is learned over time through experience. And one of my Bibles is it's the Seven Spiritual Laws of Success by Deepak Chopra. It's one of my favorite books, and in it he talks about it's our intrinsic nature. Like if you think about our intrinsic nature and just the nature of the world, like grass doesn't
Yeah,
think
what
about
really is
growing.
that? Do we understand what that intrinsic nature really
Well,
is?
that's what well and that's what I like to understand it as. But like with the grass doesn't think about growing, it just grows. Right? The earth, which I see there, isn't, it doesn't think about spinning on its axis, it just spins. Right?
Created to do so.
The sun doesn't think about shining, it just shines. And it's their intrinsic nature to do so. I think it's our intrinsic nature is, and there's a lot of books about this, but the whole concept of the secret and law of attraction, all that stuff, and all the stuff that came before that, way before that, is all intended to imply the same concept, is that like if we think ourselves, whatever we think is our experiences, good or bad, want or don't want, like or dislike, we're having that experience every moment of every day. So the whole concept of all those things is to make sure that we're thinking the right thoughts and feeling the right feelings. But it's hard, the hardest thing to do to the unconditioned mind. And so it takes training and conditioning to do so. But I believe our intrinsic nature is to make our dreams and goals come true in this short lifetime. That's our intrinsic nature. But we suffer from that mostly because of marketing and our conditioned behavior in response to our subconscious conditioned response to life. So we don't follow through on what it is we want to do. And therefore, our dreams and goals don't come to fruition because of what we're seeing and what we're taught to feel. And that's what happened.
Agreed. Now, let me ask you a little deeper question in that intrinsic nature. Is it possible that, and let me first go back and reference the Vedas, right, which are 15,000-year-old scriptural texts. And they posit that we are all part of a unit of consciousness, divine threads incarnate, if you will, capable of being God conscious. Well, what does that mean? Is there a natural order built into us in the depths of our being that's part of this discovery process that you're talking about, the intrinsic nature, being curious as to who we really are, what we can really do individually and collectively in order to bring about a new world order of harmony among people and planet? Because that's kind of the choice point we're at right now, is what are we going to do in order to restore our world, because we've done our best to destroy it and each other in the process so far from the unconscious pattern behavior.
Yeah, it is an unconscious pattern of behavior. But do you believe it? So this is a great discussion. And I always like, I had one of this discussion.
I call them apocalyptic chats for a reason.
Yeah. Do you know James Arthur Ray?
I do. I met him in person, didn't care for him from the moment I met him.
Yeah, he's a unique character. And I had him on my show a few years ago. And we had this talk too. And it was really interesting. Because do you believe, like I believe, that human behavior is very similar, if not the same, as it was 15,000 or however many years we've been around here. But now we have iPhones, right? So I think that we've constantly been hurting ourselves and destroying. Now we have the technology and then all the other physical things that we're destroying our physical world with, but I think that the human behavior itself has been pretty similar, and divisive and destroying each other based on to make them believe and think the same way I think and stuff
right,
like that.
We wanted to believe and trust in those who were pretending to be the soothsayers, right? The even priests. Right. And the whole religious thing, you know, with the intercessors, you know, you're failed, you never reach the glory and except through us. And then Jesus came along and said, that's not how it works. You got a direct connect. Just use it. Right. And I'll show you how, and I'll be an example of it. And that's what we've missed. Right. The essence of that truly connected universal mind within each of us that guides and directs us to specific ways of being when we become vulnerable and curious enough to ask the right questions to get there. Kind of like Renee or Rainer Maria Rilke, you're familiar with, I'm sure. He says, ask the question, shut up, live your life, allow your life to answer the question, because you're not going to answer it with your own thinking. How have you found that to be true?
Yeah, allowing life to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, again, it's a discipline. You know, I think we're all waiting for the quick pill and the quick answer for everything, and there isn't. And
well, there might be a quick answer, right? Like,
yeah.
Nature, like our true nature is to love and be loved. Well, what's that mean? Therein is the complexity on an individual scale, because we're all as different as snowflakes. And yet, we're all part of the same oneness that we've yet to really understand. One dear friend, Dudley Lynch, wrote a book back in the 80s called The Strategy of the Dolphin. His most recent work was The Mother of All Minds. And in that, he states that we're like we've got an alpha chassis, our body, right? The alpha mind is the one still steeped in competition. The beta mind now is one that has at least an understanding of the concept of oneness. And that's where we're learning, like, the word global civilization now. We are a planetary civilization. How do we evolve as that rather than how can I get what I want?
It's going to be really hard at this point right now, and it's going to take some sort of tragedy or
COVID gave us an opportunity, right? The obsession on self-hygiene and sequestration gave people a chance to sit back and go, oh, who am I? What do I really believe in? Am I, you know, here to do something? What's my mission? And then there's the flip side of that, where it just totally got people into this fear-based, oh my God, state. And the results are, from what I've seen, that initially there were a bunch of virtual groups that began forming during COVID, people looking for each other that had a different view of how we can proceed, not from a fear-based perspective. Do you see that? And could that, in reflection to the notion of time and harmony, and that when you're in harmony, time seems to be less than necessary in order to get things done, right? Normal, in both my degrees, there was this stressing of it's going to take you three times longer than you think it will to get stuff done. So just be aware of that, right? Where now it is kind of moving the opposite direction, where when you can create that baseline of harmony, of communication, of collective agreement in working on projects and businesses, and like the team that you were speaking with that right before we got on, when you give them charge and you trust them to go do their thing and they're good at what they do, it takes less time to accomplish those things, evidenced by the onslaught of AI, right? That's an example of how human consciousness has been put into machines that then can do more work more effectively because they don't have the emotional bullshit. Right. So how do we get rid of the emotional bullshit?
Yeah, awareness and mindfulness, mindful living. It's really most of the problems come from mindless living, the undisciplined mind and the ego, and as long as that's around, and people are so attached to their points of view and their land and their stuff and their material possessions, and mm-hmm. and trying to convince other people to believe the way that they believe. And I think it's so interwoven right now that it's, you know, what you said earlier was really important about the oneness. And
I know it sounds like really woo-woo, new age, you know, stuff. In the past, it did. Now quantum physics is giving us a little better insight because science is now backing up what spirituality has been teaching for millennia.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, we are one, and when the problems come, when we think we're separate from the whole, and people think that they're in control or that they need to do this differently or whatever. And, you know, don't get me wrong. There's times for it. There's the trailblazers. There's the people that need to create something new.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Everything
yeah.
has its place.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we need that actually to advance. And then at one point, are we advancing? And what point are we, does it look like we're advancing? Like, oh, we have iPhones, but now we hate each other more than ever. We're more insecure
Great
than
point.
Ever.
Great point. Because again, it's nothing good or bad. It's how we think it's so, right? And being able to see this, what seems to be a distraction, right, is a learning curve. That's all it is. And to take back the emotion to realize, okay, we're not in control of this. However, I can control how I think and feel about it and remain open.
And respond how I respond.
Right. So that's a
that's
personal...
the difference. So, I mean, we have to, and I do think, because we always talk about it from a negative perspective. I think a lot of people do, but I think that if,
but
I
that's
think
because we're used to that.
Yeah,
we're used
exactly.
to pointing fingers, not realizing we got three coming back at us.
Exactly. But I think that there are groups, luckily, that are using social media and using technology to bring about good. And I don't think yet they don't get noticed as much because it doesn't invoke as much drama and sell as much ads. But
well, yeah, what is the old adage that the bad news travels 9 times faster, right?
Of course, yeah. And so people tune back in because that's all fear-based stuff. I mean, it's all calculated. Everything we do is a path through marketing, right? So you're either watching CNN or Fox News based on your belief system. They know who you are. They know who you are now. And they know who's watching that show, and it's a show. It's not news. It's a show. And they know who's watching that show, and then they know exactly what to say and how to make you feel, and then they cut to a commercial that's going to fix that problem that they just caused in you, whether
right.
it's to buy a new car or go to Chick-fil-A at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever it is that they need you to do to make money. And so they're controlling us. They're the puppet masters. That's what all
I
that
remember.
Means.
There's a guy from that left Google. Formed a nonprofit to counter this activity. And one of the things he says implicitly is people are products now.
Totally, 100%. Yeah. So awareness is everything. And if we don't have that awareness, which is hopefully like these shows are great because we're hopefully somebody's listening that goes, wow, that makes a lot of sense. Maybe I should rethink the way that I'm looking at or what I'm
precisely
looking at. Yeah, and so if we reach people little by little, because then they start spreading the awareness and they start spreading the awareness.
Yeah, and they're incremental. You know, like you said, there's nothing so simple that it's a you know, you make the choice and there's a ubiquitous event. You know, it's incremental. We grow by choices, by recognizing that, you know, that what we just failed to produce wasn't a failure at all. It was a learning curve as to what we need to be aware of in order to make a better product or service or have a better conversation or all of those kinds of edifying moments rather than the distracting and destructive ones.
Yeah, 100%. But it's just awareness. Like you have the awareness or you don't. And then once you have the awareness, then you can practice discernment.
But
You
how
know?
Do we develop that awareness? How did you find those key points of order that helped you to understand that you were the one that had the choice?
Yeah, pain and suffering. We talked about it before the show.
Yeah.
It's like, and so if I have enough money in the bank and the health is good, the relationship's good, why change? Right. So we only really change when there's some sort of pain and suffering. So if we don't need to change, like as this is ingrained in our mind, it's a human behavior. It's like we want to, and it's animal behavior too. It's just that's all we are as animals. It's like we want to find what we're trying to do is find a place of comfort. So that's where we're trying to reach. So when we get there, then we kind of stop growing. Right. But when something gets hard, then we're forced to change. And then that's when all change happens. So if we have enough money, the relationship's good and the health is good, we don't change. So as soon as one of those is off, there's pain. And pain forces us to find a solution to get comfortable again. It's an ongoing cycle, and it's ancient wisdom. It's not
symptoms. It's like pharmacology, right? Deal with the symptoms, not the cause.
Exactly. Yeah, so there is a pill, and it's Xanax. So you could take that and not have to care anymore. And then there's a bunch of zombies walking around the planet that don't care. So the answer is that, you know, the problem, I mean, it's funny, you have a good way of pulling all this stuff out, but the real problem, you know, like people talk about how to fix the deficit or the healthcare. We're never going to fix the healthcare. People, I know really intelligent, well intentioned people with high power and high capability that are trying to change the medical system. And they have great intentions and great ideas to do so. But the only thing, none of it's ever going to work. The only thing that's ever going to change the medical system is removing the things that are making people sick. And we can't do that because we need the money, right? You can't have, the only way to remove the problems, the cancer, the diabetes, and all the problems that are going to fix the healthcare system, we have to remove Budweiser, Snickers, McDonald's, and all the Coca-Cola, all the shit that's making people sick every day that they keep pumping into themselves. Then right. The cigarettes and the alcohol and all the things that are causing the illness are causing the healthcare problems. Those are causing the healthcare problems. If you remove those, then there's no more healthcare problems. What happened was, here's what happened. We found what we've been looking for thousands of years. We found, they made movies about it, the Fountain of Youth. We used to die when we were like 25 years old. Now we live to 90 or 100 years old. That wasn't like, really, from a nature standpoint, it really wasn't supposed to happen. Dogs die when they're 15. We were really not, you know, I was watching this thing. I remember it was almost 5 years ago because I was 47. I was at the gym and they had this on the TV, these trivial facts. And it said in 1907, which is just 115 years ago, the average lifespan was 47. And I was fucking 47 years old. I was like, I would have died 100 years ago. So now we're living to 90, 100 years old. You might not remember stuff. You know, there's Alzheimer's and impotency. But, you know, and everybody's like, oh, it's so tragic. He has Alzheimer's. It's sad, but it's not tragic. Like, maybe you were supposed to die 60 years ago, but we're keeping you alive. So we have the medicine to stay alive longer, but everybody's sick because they're pumping the chemicals into their body. So remove the things that are causing the problem, and the problem goes away.
And there's trust of the people in the system because that's the only thing that they've been able to adapt. It's
marketing. Yeah, it's what I do. It's marketing. Marketing will tell you, you know, marketing has 5 to 10 seconds to tell you you have a problem and give you the solution. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you have 5 to 10 seconds. So it's like the best.
Like Max Headroom, the old Blipfurts, right? Do you remember him?
Yeah, Max Headroom. I do. Yeah, it's funny.
Foretelling.
Huh?
Foretelling. He was. Because that's what we're doing. And whether it's subliminal or now we know it's happening and it's not so, it's still subliminal, but we're conscious that it's taking place now, which gives us the opportunity to think about it. Now, as you were talking about things that, what came to mind, and I'm not necessarily a religious person, but the words, if ye shall listen to my words, ye shall not taste death. That supposedly was said by one we hold in high esteem, or at least most do. What would that really mean if we were to understand what that meant, and that recognizing that we, as we spoke before, we are cosmic consciousness condensed into form, just unaware. Well, that cosmic consciousness essentially is formless to begin with. So from that perspective, if we fully embodied that and achieved the God consciousness the Vedas talk about, then would we, or potentially would we, become eternal at that point? Because we wouldn't necessarily need the body, yet we could come into it in order to experience creation, because it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean,
interesting question, right?
It really is. I mean, that gets into time, and is there a how big is the universe? Like those types of things is like, sure. Yeah, the answer is yeah. Like we're limitless and timeless. And, you know, if we talk about God, God is just our conditioned awareness, like our understanding.
Yeah, and do we even know? You know, I had a question about the Trinity years ago because it was ubiquitous. It's everything, right? And so I wanted to know where the origin was. And I had this was a deep curiosity that I held for decades. And then through the serendipitous moment of preparing to go into a guided process for another purpose, I don't know if you're familiar with guides and allies and things like that, or some have them and some they are aware. They're beings that accompany us in our lives for the betterment of them, obviously. But my guide shows up. I've been familiar with him since I was 17, this was, or 18. This was, I was 31 at the time. And so he shows up and he simply says, come. So the process was designed to create your astral body, project your consciousness into it, and travel. So this is, I was already used to this. So as soon as he beckoned me, I was out of my body. We were traveling across the universe and stars were going by initially and then nothing. And I didn't keep track of the time, although I was told it took 8 minutes when I came back. But we got to this three sun system with about a dozen really lush green planets about 1/20th, 30th the size of the spheres. And I had a sense of like Jodie Foster, you know, I was like tears streaming down my eyes because it was such a beautiful, awe-inspiring moment. And I'm at the perimeter of this. And then all of a sudden I hear it's like multiple voices as one. And it says, we are not only your forefathers, we are also the forefathers of your solar system. I wanted to ask questions. My guide says, nope, that's it. That's all you need. You'll figure it out. And I'm like, right. So back we came, and on the way back, I recognized, okay, so if that's the macro, then the micro, as far as we know, has got to be the proton, electron, or neutron. And the consciousness is in the space that we see as dark energy or don't understand yet. So coming back with that, and then, you know, starting to use that reference and looking at everything, it was a really interesting exploration. And where I got to was that, okay, hydrogen is the only thing that doesn't fit that model. What's hydrogen then? Well, it most prevalent gas in the universe, powers the sun, and it's the bonding agent for a DNA helix. Could it also be the conduit for consciousness? Now, this is just things I'm postulating. I don't know, but it's a sure, you know, it's a curious question because of the experience that I had. And it took 8 minutes to get there and 8 minutes to get back. One of my other curiosities was, what's the speed of thought? The only reference I found to it was in a book called the Urantia book, which is a channeled 2,000 page volume of the spiritual material hierarchy of creation. I mean, they really break it down. It's a pretty heady read, right? And the reference in there was 841 trillion miles per second is the speed of thought. So that's instantaneous here, teleportation, right? Boom, you think you're there. We are capable. There's multiple references to people who can bilocate, right? And it's not a necessarily difficult thing to do. You have to just allow yourself to agree with yourself that it's actually happening and then seek reflection from the other to validate it. And in a lot of cases, it has been. So these are all kinds, there's all kinds of areas of consciousness, multiple dimensions, you know, Nepean closes, triadic dimensional distinction, vortical paradigm, which states that consciousness, space, and time are tethered across 9 dimensions. So that's for the human bandwidth, if you will, amongst the electromagnetic spectrum. So all these kinds of things are there when you start asking questions and you know, begin the journey to find them out. Mind blowing, right? What do you do with that except, okay, there's more. right? And how does this impact me personally in this body at this time? And how can I learn to integrate with that if it plays out to be true? How would you think that in the area that you've been in, the marketing, the business, and I know what I just said deeply resonated with you. How would you turn that into something that could, even in the current 5 to 7 second time frame, be able to begin to nudge that shift in others?
A big question. I don't know if I have a right answer right now.
There are no wrong ones, right? There's just postulates of, okay, given what I know, here's a possibility, right? And then we, like any hypothesis, we check it, we test it.
I know. I don't
kind of blew your mind with that one
somewhere. Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot for me to take in. I kind of got lost somewhere.
I tend to have that happen.
Yeah, clarify your question. I don't mind answering questions. I enjoy it, but it's
given the understanding of the magnitude of so many other possibilities based on the science, the exploration, and the information we have, and what I just shared with you, how could that then be put back into the marketing framework and be effective in helping to shift the consciousness of humanity at this point?
Yeah, well, to understand that there's different ways of thinking and living, and to, you know, that live and let live, I guess that goes back to that question. It's like, we don't have to be so rigid and forceful about our points of view and to make people think the way that we do, that we can use our channels to bring awareness, to help build awareness, positive awareness about living and let live. You know, what is it? You know, a lot of times when we're focused on what other people are doing, it's because we're unfocused about what we're doing. You know, I think if we get laser focused on, and that's the reason most people fail with their goals and dreams, is because they're like, I have these 50 things to do, and that's too much, so I'm not going to do any. So I'm going to go to Chick-fil-A and eat Snickers and get drunk. So, because I'm unfocused and unclear. So if we can use our channels to help people get clear, then I think, you know, and allow people to get focused on one thing. You know, I talk about, there's a book, The One Thing. I use that principle a lot in my coaching. It's like every New Year's, it was just New Year's last week. New Year's resolutions come out and people are like, well, I'm going to write a book, start a business, lose 30 pounds, fix my relationship. But so it's like, get sober. So those are five big things. It's impossible to do five big, huge things at the same time at a high level and get them all done. And some people get overwhelmed and then they quit. Now, a week later.
But
so the
is
only
it really
one, is to get
impossible?
One at a time.
Is it really impossible? Because I, as a project manager with, you know, decades of experience, everything has rhythm and cycles and flow. And when you can be aware of that timing and be maybe even hyper aware of it, there are moments, gaps in activity where you're waiting for something, right? We switch that in, that waiting into doing, you know, you're already being. Right, that's the most important part of it. You got to be first, right? And then the doing comes secondary. And as you're questioning what's next, right, which we do, and we're waiting for that next insight or that next activity to formulate and expose itself to us, because it has its own consciousness as well that's seeking us as we're seeking it, then that's the reflective nature. Then that allows those cycles and rhythms where we have the gaps to actually be more productive, because we're doing more in less time. Which, going back to the my statement about the measurement of time being, you know, a change in the entropy. This came from a guy named Wilbert Smith, who had conversations with people from elsewhere as the director of Project Magnet, which was Canada's UFO, kind of like the US's Project Blue Book, right? It was their investigation program. He had actually conversations. And one of those things he reflected from them was that our measurement, our idea of time is not consistent with theirs. Their idea of time is a measurement and a change of entropy. When we think about a new world order being one of harmony among people and planet, this brings that aspect of collective activities that are more harmonious because they're, you slow down to build that initially in creating the communication networks, the planning, the strategy, and all things like you do with your teams, right? And then allowing them their space without control to be creative and innovative to create whatever's necessary to do so. But because of their commonality, there's less friction. And with less friction, it truncates the time frame. It's like a construction project that, you know, 2 to 5 years long. And the more you develop the team to begin with, that has the capacity for truncating the time, the schedule, as well as curtailing, you know, budget, under time, under budget deliveries. How does that fit in with the activities that you've been aware of and how you see business developing today in the work that you're doing? Did I frame that to where it made sense?
Again, I got a little lost. I think just a clear question. A clearer question would be better.
Okay. Well, I wanted to give you a kind of a foundation for from whence the question came.
Yeah, sure. I got you.
So understanding the nature of potential oneness, collective teams, cohesiveness within the teams, how do you see that being more present in how businesses are developing today and the work that you're doing?
So let's see, are we talking about like a leadership, about a leadership bring like creating that oneness?
Well, we're all in a sense leaders, right? But,
yeah.
And I suppose it would be more in a framework of the potential of what servant leadership and how it's unfolding throughout the business environment. Do you see, first of all, do you see that happening? Do you see servant leadership becoming more and more present in the business development and even the reframing of existing businesses now? Because one of the things that Schwab had said in his book that in order for businesses to survive, they've got to be agile. And I would say not only do they need to be agile, they need to be more conscious of their connectedness.
Yeah, I believe that there is definitely a positive shift in that direction. And I think it's because it's not a choice anymore. I think there used to be a more of a, that old command and demand leadership style used to be, well, it was normal. You know, so it was, you could do it, but there's no space for that in today's business world.
It goes from competition to collaboration, I think, is the shift, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I think that to answer that, that's a much easier question. Yes, I do see that. I mean, the best leaders, they're leading at eye level now rather than from above, you know. I think there's more empathy. There's more, there's just a more accepting point of view. I do think that all the efforts people are making with inclusion is actually happening. And of course, that's a positive change, of course, and necessary. Because if you look at the old way of, you know, hiring only a certain number of people with a certain look, a certain feel, a certain age group, and I mean you're cutting off so much opportunity. And if you're missing out on that diversity and I mean,
Well,
you're
we have
going
the
to
diversity in the world. Why wouldn't it apply to business, right? You've got a multi-generational civilization. Why not make use of that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you're not, you're just going to struggle and miss out on the people from the people that are doing that, which is everybody else now, you know, and it's unavoidable, mostly because, you know, if we talk about like the social media and the millennials, those are the people that are starting to get that be in charge now. You know, pretty soon they're the ones, they're the leaders. So they already have that mindset. So some of the change has been positive. Some of it is just people that aren't fully informed trying to create change, which is what causes a lot of problems. But the ones that are informed are making positive changes. But I think at some point, you know, if you're looking at the business models that are really successful, like Apple and Google and stuff, I mean, the ones that have ping pong tables in their office, the ones that have like daytime nap, required nap time, stuff like that, they realize that we can't be productive for 8 hours a day at a high level, that we're really only productive for 1 or 2 hours, maybe four, for really highly productive people. And then utilizing different perspectives, different points of view, different education, different age groups and ethnicities. Like, those are the businesses that are becoming ultra successful.
I totally agree. And thank you for reflecting that, because I see the same thing. Even that I spent some time as a high school teacher back in the 90s and early aughts. And for my second degree, I wrote a business plan for a model school, which was based on holistic education. And I took it even a step further to include mind, body, spirit, and planet, as well as cosmos. But these are elements that we don't have in our current educational system. There was much more of that. And my wife's from St. Petersburg, Russia. She grew up in the USSR. Their educational system is far more robust than America's.
Ours is a disaster.
It really is. And even at that time, because I built this model, having taught in various environments, I built it for at-risk kids. And when I took it to the Child Protective Services Arizona Director of Education, he said, "I love it. You're light years ahead of us. I don't know if we'll ever get there." So that was, on one hand, is like, yes. On the other, is like, oh shit, right? And yet, it's still optional. There is much more now that can create those instances that, you know, schools, villages, now as we're looking at reframing how we live, and there's this whole regenerative culture movement happening to redefine bioregions and how we live in them, because we haven't been utilizing our understanding of nature and how to live with it, not command and demand it. Right.
Yeah, well, we've actually separated from nature, but I love the idea of the talking about our broken school system. I mean,
we'll get there. I can, we see that evidence. It's going to take time. We don't know how long. However, there's multiple avenues, there's then multiple groups and people who are waking up to this notion of holistic education. Australia actually has had it in play for a number of years. 20 years ago, they were the model. And that's a lot of where I got the materials that I wrote about from.
Well, yeah, it's a generational fix. It's going to take, if we start now making the shift, it has to take a whole generation, because there's college degrees, there's like all the requirements to be able to teach that stuff, which it seems like you really shouldn't need certain degrees for some of it, because some of it should be
expertise and ought to supplant education, I think.
Right? Yeah, but teaching useful, applicable knowledge that you can use in 2024 instead of, you know, 1873,
right,
or whatever. So
it's not necessarily what you learn, it's how, right? When you can instruct how to be inclusive, how to look around and see those other aspects of life that make a difference on what you're doing. You take the blinders off, right? And you have that 360 view, which is a challenge and yet imperative to do so, as we are realizing now with our current climate situation.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's a mess. But I think that I think at some point a lot of it will be fixed. I think that unfortunately it is going to take some sort of event to create, to bring the oneness back together. But I don't, like, if you look back at 9/11 or even like the 100 years ago at the real pandemic, the when that, what was that, in 1919 or
Spanish flu or the
Spanish flu, yeah, like that, those things actually,
team, we got to blame it on somebody. It wasn't the flu, it was the Spanish flu.
The Spanish flu, yeah. But
it wasn't the regular flu, it was COVID.
Right. But what it did was, it actually, there was some unity, because it was like this thing that was based on fear that caused people to see things differently and come together somehow.
Well,
but then we went
was the rubber band of being, you know, stretching us out, separating us all.
Yes. But and now what's happened though is, like, we're back in old behavior. You know, like, I remember as things started opening up again, there was people started getting back on the road. And you would think after all that time of, like, fear and panic and being stuck and isolated, that some of the road rage would have went away, that some of the panic and fear and anxiety and stress would have melted away and people would see things differently, but they didn't. I mean, a week later, there was people driving around.
Well, those wouldn't have, because those are the fear-based ones to begin with. They're going to remain the same. It's those who took the time, garnered the awareness, and advanced themselves in their own thinking, which are still rather subdued, right? We don't hear or see a lot about them yet. However, you and I both know they're there.
Sure.
We deal with them on a daily basis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, in closing, because we're about out of time, if you were able to give some personal daily advice to others for them to explore and see how it works for them, what might that be?
Yeah, I get a version of this question asked to me a lot, and the best wisdom I can advise for people, and it's for me too, is to always stay curious. It's to always have an open mind and to ask questions. And when we stop learning, we die. You know, when we think we know everything, when we think we know all the rules change. And it's like, don't ever lose your sense of wonder. Like, be curious. When we're a kid, everything is like, look at that, look at that. And then we get older and we have to start adulting. And adulting is causing so much of our problems. If we reconnect with our inner child, stay curious, and enjoy the days, enjoy the experiences, that's really the best way to enjoy this short time in this physical human body that we have before we move on to whatever's next, is stay curious. Try to learn as much as possible. Read books, listen to shows, go after your dreams. You know, write a plan for your dreams. If you don't know how to get somewhere or do something, ask for help. That's the biggest thing. We're taught as men, especially, don't ask for help, figure it out, work through it. And I was always, remember, we didn't always have, people of our age, we didn't always have Google Maps. We had to stop and ask for directions. We had, like, maps that we would drive around with, these big maps on our front seats, and trying to figure out how to get there. I always just stopped and asked for directions, because I was like, I would rather look like a fool or whatever for 1 minute and get there in 5 minutes and drive around for an hour like an idiot and be lost. So ask questions. The one thing about the internet, everything's at our fingertips. Now, be careful who you're getting your advice from, but you could do a little research there too. But keep asking questions, and you'll eventually get where you want to go.
Awesome. And sometimes the fool is oft the wise.
At times, for sure.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Dennis. This has been an absolutely wonderful conversation. I totally appreciate your time And I know our audience has gained a lot from it as well.
Thank you, Zen. It was really nice talking with you, man.
Super. And namaste and in la ketch. And thanks for sticking with us for this episode of One World in the New World. I'm Zen Benefiel, your host, and I'll see you next time.